Lupa, very good morning. How are you?
Morning, Howard. How are you?
Excellent, thank you. Just saying the Johnny Clegg Memorial today, playing us in Bonanga. It's just it's got such a sad energy to it when you listen to it, knowing it's sort of you're playing it on the day of his memorial.
It is. You know, for me, it's interesting because I got to know of his music through my roommate in boarding school. A chap who went by the dubious distinction of a name called Animal. Well, that was our nickname for him.
Right.
And he was a very big Juluka fan. So he was interesting. He listened to heavy metal and Juluka. So if you can mix those two, go figure it out. But that was my initiation to it.
Yeah, unbelievable. But that's not what we're chatting about. I wanted to speak to you and get your view on the public protector. This has been going on for a while. She's taking more and more headlines. She seems to be behaving, in my view, more and more bizarrely, even putting herself at risk for what I think is an agenda that she's off on at the moment. And she can't come back from it. What are your thoughts on it?
It's very difficult, you know, because when she made the initial findings, most people kind of gave her the benefit of the doubt and said, well, it's a matter of interpretation. But the more she's gone on, I mean, if you take the one with the president, for instance, with the campaign funding, it's divided people for sure. I mean, when I speak to a lot of people, there are some who find sympathy with her particular view. But I think what makes her case very damning is that the Constitutional Court found that, you know, basically, her approach to these matters is very suspect. It's troubling, Howard, and I think what for me is even more curious is that she was supported by a lot of people when she was appointed. I mean, it's not as if the former president woke up and just appointed her randomly. You know, there was a selection process, and although some people say they didn't support it, I know the EFF, you know, at the time seemed to be in support of it. And certainly when she went against Pravin Gordhan, the EFF were fully behind her. And all of a sudden now they're trying to straddle and hedge their bets and say, you know, I listened to an interview where Juju was saying, we thought as an African woman, you know, as an African child, let's stand behind her and give her the benefit of the doubt. But, so she's finding herself in a very difficult position.
So is the EFF now no longer supportive of? Or only in certain matters when it suits their agenda?
When it suits their agenda, they're kind of giving a statement that's muddled. I mean, there was a video released where Juju said, we stood behind her, we will support her. So it almost became a case of, we'll support her case by case. So it's no longer a case of, we'll support her blanketly, but we'll review each case she's handling and then decide what we do. And which is troubling because you've got to take a principled view and say she's either competent in doing her work well or she's not. But you can't, you know, have a piecemeal and cherry pick. So certainly they were behind her with the Pravin Gordhan issue. But, you know, with the latest ruling, they're kind of abandoning it, but not completely. So they're standing in the middle and kind of saying, we'll support her. And I think this is the challenge in South Africa because I mean, she's taken on Pravin Gordhan, she's taken on the president. So if you're in the opposition, you might find that amusing and say, well, let's see how far she goes with it. Mm. But at the same time, I mean, it has far-reaching, impact because if you take the issue of campaign funding, you know, it's a blurred line. If somebody deposits money, can you be held accountable for it? But I think where she finds some degree of sympathy is the fact that the way a lot of these issues were handled, particularly the one of the president where he kind of came out and he said, oh no, the money, initially was for my son. He did consultancy work. I spoke with him. I mean, I listened to the interview and he said, if there's anything wrong, I'll march him to prison myself. He showed me the contracts. I'm completely happy. So whilst you can find fault with her, I think in one or two cases, the other players haven't exactly covered themselves in glory. You may argue and say legally the president has done nothing, but it's just the saga, the way it played out and the way he explained it and the initial explanation he gave us and where we are now are talking cheese. So as much as we find fault with her, we can't forget that issue that either the president really knew what his son was up to or his son lied. I mean, the money, you know, it can't change so many times.
Yeah,
but I think I think many people kind of look at her versus Tully and look at her in that contrast and try and contrast the two, which I suppose you can do so because, you know, she succeeded Tully in office, but she is her own person and she has to chart her own path. At the moment, it's not looking very clear and it's looking very muddy. And when you listen to a lot of constitutional lawyers and experts, a lot of them are saying, you know, the kind of pronouncements that are being made about her character and ability by the Concord are very damning, and therefore calling to question her ability to actually discharge the role of the public protector.
Yeah, for me, the biggest issue here is the fact that I think she's taking our eye off the ball when it comes to the important things that she should be dealing with. So by focusing on everything else, and causing this total chaos around the president and around Pravin Gordhan, to me, the danger here is that we aren't focusing on what we need to, and that is state capture.
No, we're not. We're not at all. And I mean, you know, there is obviously a view that says she is behind a particular faction that is obviously against the president and against Pravin Gordhan. And unfortunately, her findings have in some ways supported that allegation. So I'm not saying it's true, but I'm just simply saying the findings that she's made and the fact that she's just pursued these particular cases. And if you take, for instance, the one in Free State where she found no blame with Ace and these issues. So it raises a lot of questions. But the question I always ask is, I mean, what's in it for her? Because surely if she pursues this course of action.
That's where I wanted to go with it.
She'll destroy her image.
I would say she already has. She's been called a liar by the highest court in the country. She's been accused of lying under oath. She's been accused of being incompetent. She's lost an unacceptable number of cases, which either shows incompetence or intent. And that's very, very problematic. I think that she has gone down a path for somebody else's benefit that is most likely to destroy her career completely. I mean, where would she possibly go from there?
Well, it's hard to argue in incompetence in the sense that, I mean, she's not a lone ranger, one person in the office. She has a team around her. So surely the other people in the team would advise. So then you've got to believe that it's a deliberate course of action. But, you know, Howard, it takes us back to the issue where you're saying, let's go back to, for instance, the Brian Molefe issue in Eskom. There are so many people who were implicated in state capture, but we haven't been able to understand what they gained from it. I mean, Eskom prepaid the Gupta's, you know, $500 million, and all manner of contracts were tweaked in their favor. Now you ask yourself and you say, if you were the person orchestrating this, what was your benefit? It has to be financial. I mean, I'm not trying to, you know, cast a cloud over people, but what else could compensate you for destroying your reputation, for doing something that you know will be exposed and that you will be found wanting? Because there's no life after that. So it's not as if you go from being private protector and let's say you get removed from that office and then you go and become an advocate. There is no life for you. So we can speculate and say, you know, is it because she blindly believes in that cause or is there something, some way to compensate her? I would believe as a rational human being that a person can only do that if there's some way they're going to be compensated for it because you're destroying your career. And you're destroying your reputation and you cannot really practice, you know, I mean, I heard one call where they were saying she must be disbarred as an advocate. So if you destroy your reputation as an advocate, as a public protector, in the public service, you have no future life. In the private sector, you're going to struggle because that will always follow you unless you set up and somebody says, here's X amount of money, pursue this particular agenda. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have no proof, but that's all I can reason. So when I look at the issues of state capture, where I think the trouble is that we often don't see the quid pro quo when somebody pulls these strings and engineers these issues and these decisions. What are they getting? That, I think, is a trouble. And that's something I think we'll forever struggle to see, because unless somebody steps up and owns up and says this was where the deal on the table. Mm. And certainly from Cyril's camp, I mean, it's keeping the president busy, you know, just fighting. I was saying to somebody yesterday, we've gone from a country that didn't litigate to one where almost every party is running to court and everybody's running to court over something. I mean, if you look at the last, let's say, 5 years, the amount of litigation from the presidency, from ministers and so forth, we've almost become Americanized, where the courts of law are the only place where we adjudicate issues.
Yeah,
which is sad because it's costing a huge amount of money
it also says so much more, because it says that the judiciary is the only non-biased acceptable party that anybody will listen to. Now, I think that's very positive. I think we have to take a moment and acknowledge the fact that all parties, we've never had a situation where, in fact, there was once a couple of years ago, but other than that. And that's when Zuma tried to attack the judiciary slightly. But aside from that one incident, everybody accepts the independence of the judiciary. And I think that's absolutely critical.
Absolutely. But the challenge, I think, is what you alluded to earlier. If you keep our president and senior ministers fighting court battles to clear their names, you do in some way tarnish the country's image abroad. From an investor point of view, because if you're sitting across the ocean, the Atlantic, looking at South Africa, at some point you're going to ask yourself some questions and say, what on earth is going on in that country? You know, you've got now the president being told that he's flouted constitutional rules. You've got a senior cabinet minister. So as much as I agree with you, our kind of display of democracy and our judiciary standing its ground, but it's a pity. It's a pity that we had to prove it that way. One kind of wishes that we didn't have these issues, because, like I'm saying, they create that cloud. And you know, if you listen to other radio stations, you'll be amazed at, I would say, you've probably got about 40% of callers who actually stand behind the private protector in all of these issues. And when you listen to the reasoning, it's not necessarily legal, but it's more sentiment. And there lies the danger, is that some people are believing her because they want to believe this narrative against Pravin, against the president. Mm. And I think that's the trouble, where it's creating this very negative sentiment domestically. And obviously, if you're the Minister of International Relations, you're going to have to spend a great deal of time reassuring our foreign partners that all is well, that, you know, this is, you know, our courts will eventually exonerate the president and prove that there's nothing to it.
Right,
in some ways, it's almost like Bibi in Israel.
Tell me why. In which sense?
No, I mean, not quite the same, but I mean, if you look at Israel, how the court cases and all of those things almost preoccupy the national stage, and you kind of say, really, is everything important in Israel around, you know, the charges against the prime minister? Is there nothing beyond that? Because you just see so much of that, and it goes on and on, and it does create a negative sentiment, because here we know a bit more, but when I look at Israel, where I know less about the politics and everything else, but you sit and you start to wonder, and you say, but can a person have so many charges? Surely there must be something maybe that they've got here. So,
I think the difference there is, although there are those people that believe that this is political, there's also a sense of, trust in the system, that it doesn't mean that it's only about that. You know that it's going to be investigated. They're going
to manipulated to take something.
Correct. They will pursue the charges. We've seen presidents there, prime ministers there going to prison. Whereas here, and unfortunately, the problem here is that Cyril Ramaphosa is in a very difficult position, because if he lashes out at the public protector, who is, I think, becoming more and more emboldened in his personal pursuit. The problem is then already he's perceived as having an agenda, which of course he does have. But unfortunately, you can only really rely on the courts to be this measure of what is and what isn't acceptable.
But think of life for the ANC. I mean, not long ago, before she got into office, they were backing her. And now they're stuck with somebody who they, you know, backed completely as the ideal candidate. And now she's turning out to be a bit of a disaster for them. And so, I mean, I'm always curious, how does a party respond to that? Because right now you have to say the majority of the ANC would want to defend the president, but against a candidate that you yourselves recommended very highly because you still have the majority of the same individuals who were there. And I think this is the dilemma with the factions. And I think it's exposing more about factions within the ANC than any other issue. And the inability of those factions to resolve their own issues that they play out in the public arena and they look for these issues because if we believe that she's got an agenda, then you've got to believe then that that's a particular faction. Hence, I'm saying if the ANC could somehow resolve its factional issues, then we wouldn't have these issues playing out in the national stage against Pravin, against the president. But I don't think we're anywhere close to getting the ANC to be singing Kumbaya at this stage. And I think that's the other challenge.
Absolutely.
Solutions for that, I don't know.
I'd love your thoughts. What are the solutions and what are your thoughts on this 345-19 or 061-895-1019? Luba Mayakiso, thank you as always for your incredible input and your thought on this subject. It is 8:52.